because it connects with us.
What follows on from Business Jazz?
We did an episode of Business Jazz about the Barclay Marathons in 2017, probably. I think that was when John Kelly became one of only 15 people to...
Just a second, I want to ask this. What were you saying?
It is recording. So I think it was 2017, you and I recorded an episode of Business Jazz about the Barclay Marathons. It was in a car and we were driving up to Dublin and we started recording it round about the peat fields.
Was that when we were going to the QQI work?
Must have been.
Anyway.
And John Kelly had just become the 15th person in 40 years to finish the Barclay Marathons. It was the legendary year where Gary Robbins went wrong in the final bit, and he turned up at the gate 6 seconds over the time limit, but it didn't really matter because he'd gone the wrong route. Anyway, huge drama that year, huge. So I follow a guy called Jamil Curry, who's a runner. He runs a running business in Arizona, in Phoenix, and he's tried for years to complete the Barclay Marathons. And he's got as far as the fourth loop, I think. And they actually had a rule change because of him, because on the fourth, he's notorious for falling asleep during these long events.
He goes in for many long events.
Oh, he's an ultra runner. He runs loads of these events. So he's got a bit of history of falling asleep for up to 8 hours on event. So he, for whatever reason, realized he wasn't going to complete the fourth loop on time that year, fell asleep, and he had a good old kip. And back in camp, because they don't know what's happened to you, they can't track you, they can't follow you, you leave camp and they just hope that within 8 to 15 hours that you return to camp.
Having done one loop. Having got four more to do.
And then having, you know, you've got more loops. There are five loops in total you have to complete. So on his fourth loop, he just didn't come back. So in camp, they were getting a little bit concerned that maybe something had happened to him. And they had a rule change after that, which was he was fine. He just had a sleep and then eventually turned up, I think, after 40 hours or something. Now, that was in total. I don't know how long.
Oh, right. Okay. I was thinking about Rip but it was Van a Winkle long, or something.
It was. Yeah. It wouldn't have been 40 hours. Anyway, he turned up way later than expected. A little bit of panic had started to set in terms of, do we need to call out the National Guard to find the bloke? Because this is in exceptionally inhospitable country. You don't say, look, we'll wander off and see. Look, a group of you go off and find him. That doesn't work. So they had a rule change, which was basically, look, if you know you're going to give up, come back. If you know you're not going to complete and you want, you know, you think that's it, just come back to camp on one of the regular paths as directly as possible. Don't hang around. Don't decide you're going to have a kip before you come back. Anyway, so I followed him. He's tried for years, and he's been unlucky with the weather. The weather has been atrocious for the last few years. It rained consistently this year. It was immediately obvious nobody was going to finish it this year.
You couldn't go up those slopes if they were all wet, no?
Very
anyway,
difficult.
Okay,
very
carry difficult. On, carry
very
on.
Very difficult.
Carry on.
Anyway, so I just checked my Instagram feed on the Friday morning. I didn't go too deep into my feed, but thank goodness I went far enough to see clearly a photograph of Jamil Curry at the start of the Barclay Marathon. So I don't know what gave it away.
Now, was this something that was in your feed a week before?
No, this was something that was in my feed on last Thursday. When did it start?
Oh, you got it on the day.
I got it on the day, a few hours after the race had started. And I wasn't expecting the race to start until this coming weekend at the very earliest, quite possibly the weekend after. So that was a shock. And initially I thought, oh, this is just I'm looking forward to
a trailer.
It's coming soon.
And yes,
look, guy, you know I've been training for this, and you know what I've done, and you know my setbacks in training, and you know I'm not prepared for it. But then what can prepare you for Barclay? And anyway, I thought it was going to be one of those. And it was his team tweeting he's out on the course, and I just thought, what the hell? So I had to go back. Immediately went to the gospel, the oracle, Keith Dunn, who runs the official commentary on Twitter. And then there was one tweet to do with Barclay. That's how Freddie, he doesn't tweet very much, but there was one tweet to do with Barclay, and there it was. The conch had been blown, so the conch gets blown an hour before the race starts, and the race starts when the Lazarus, Gary Cantrell, lights his cigarette. So, that's
sorry, what did you say about cigarette?
Well, he lights a cigarette, and then that's...
He lights a cigarette.
And that's the start of the race. That's the starting gun. Sorry.
Okay, yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, I should have clarified. That's the starting gun. So, the race is on. Great excitement. Of course, COVID means it's a gather practically an all-American field, if not entirely an all-American field. No overseas runners. A smaller group of runners this year than normal. It's usually around 45, I think, maybe 40. including somebody who's completed it three. He is the absolute legend. So you think, well, there's somebody there who's completed it three times. There's somebody in the field, Jamil, who knows the course, and that's very handy. Course does change a bit, but he knows roughly what the course is. The course is unknown. The course is a secret. If you and I went to do our first Barclay, we'd fail because we wouldn't really know the course. So you need to stick to a veteran who's got an idea. You get a map and you get a description, but the description is all very nebulous.
But they don't provide you with orienteering details.
No. Orienteering skills are very important. That was all great. So it was, gosh. Oh, and the world's leading lady runner was in the field as well. And she was doing it, I think, for her second year. So there was a little bit of hope, but no woman has ever completed the Barclay Marathon. And only 15 people in the history of
that
the event.
That proves nothing, since only about 15 men have ever done it.
Correct.
Right, so statistically that is not a significant
piece of information. Well, it's an interesting piece of information, because the title is there to be taken, of course.
Well, oh yeah, of course, yeah.
And you're right statistically, because I think statistically far more men have ever competed in the event than women, so it may well be that statistically speaking women are still doing better than men, who knows?
Well, exactly, yeah.
Anyway, so it was all looking good, and then the reports started coming through that the weather was atrocious. It just rained. It took the first runners...
This is in Oregon or somewhere like that, is
Tennessee.
It? Tennessee.
Yeah.
Is Tennessee like Ireland? Why is there so much rain?
Don't know. Well, this is a particular part of Tennessee.
Yeah.
It's got hills.
Snow wouldn't have surprised me.
Not
right?
Not there. No,
anyway, carry on.
It's grim.
Carry on.
So then the race has three tracks to talk about. One is what happened in the race. It was a disaster.
There are people listening to this who really haven't got a clue, Roger.
Yeah, so...
Can you just tell them that it's up and down, impossible terrain and all that?
It's incredibly difficult terrain. The race has its origins in... Is it somebody called James Earl Jones?
Well, they can look all that up on Google.
Anyway,
just tell them what the trail is like.
The terrain is horrendous. It's first of all, you have to be able to see where you're going. Now, this place is legendary for fog, and you cannot see more than maybe, if you're lucky, 10 feet in front of you. Plus, you're running in very dense forest. Very dense forest. So you're trying to run through... you're trying to run through trees, you can't see, it's very, as you say, the terrain is very steep, up and down. The verticals are ridiculous, just crazy steep, and they get converted to mud when it rains. Now, it also rains a lot here, and when it rains, it tips down. So for the first 30 hours, I gather, it just rained consistently, like being under a shower.
Monsoon.
Yeah. Something like that. It was really bad, and it was foggy as well.
Okay. That's
horrendous.
Give people, this.
The directions are very.
No. It's all funny.
The terrain is very inhospitable. The directions are very nebulous. You have to find a book. You have to find 15. Well, anywhere maybe not 15. Maybe between 10 to 15 books, and you tear out the page that has your bib number for that round on it. That's how you prove you've done the course. Usually, if anybody's going to finish the Barclay Marathons, finishing the Barclay Marathons is doing five loops. Each loop, by the way, is, in terms of horizontal distance, the length of a marathon, hence Barclay Marathons.
I didn't realise that, by the way.
Because of the vertical involved, It's much further, but nobody really knows how long it is. But you're talking in excess of 100 miles, easily. What am I talking about? You're talking in excess of 130 miles.
5 times 26, yeah. Right?
Typically, if somebody's going to do the 5 loops, you need to get the first loop in, say, 9 hours. People were trickling in 10 hours plus.
It sounds to me like as if this event takes place over a fortnight.
4 or 5 days, maybe.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Mind you, it's a bit like chess cricket these days. Chess cricket, I mean, the matches are over in 2 days. The Barclay Marathons in the last couple of years have also been over in 2 days because there are cut-off times for the loops. So you get so much time to finish the loops.
Oh, yeah.
If you do 3 loops, it's called a fun run, which is a bad badge of prestige in the Barclay community, well, in the ultra-running community, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are cut-off times for each loop, and there are cut-off times for finishing the fun run, and there are cut-off times for finishing the whole thing, 60 hours to finish the whole thing. Anyway, nobody got near that. The weather, the conditions, it was horrendous. So nobody finished. The guy who's done it 3 times, he did a fun run. He did complete 3 loops, which was pretty good in the circumstances.
Why didn't he do the last 2 loops?
No, he was outside the cutoff time to begin the last 2 loops. What was interesting is John Kelly himself was on Twitter, and he was providing a bit of analysis. Very interesting insight. So he was, say, for instance, when there were 2 guys left on the last loop, a complete rookie who clearly... loop number 3. And we were just waiting for them to come in. So it was Jared Campbell and somebody, I think it's Luke Nelson. And, Luke Nelson, as far as I know, a novice to the Barclay. So he did the clever thing of attaching himself to the most experienced Barclay runner there, and successful Barclay runner, and managing to keep up with him. But they took an awful long time to complete the 3rd loop. We were wondering, look, it's not ability. They can do this. They've shown they can do the previous 2 loops. They're not being held up too... Okay, they're going to be outside the time. But John Kelly, who was on Twitter, his previous finisher, giving analysis, he was saying, look, I reckon what they're doing is they're taking their time. They know they can't do 5. They know they're going to be able to get in for the time frame to get 3 and the fun run. But what they're doing is they're taking their time now because they're really absorbing the course. This is a big thing. If you want to finish the Barclays, you have to build up experience on the course. And even though Jared Campbell has done it many, many times, he'd still be... He'd probably even counselling Luke Nelson, look, you can't do 5, you can do 3, that's a pretty good go for the first time. Let's just slow down and really take in this course, really get used to...
Now, is he saying things like, now we're coming to a steep slope now here, or a steep side of a precipice. I found that going down the left side is the best way, because... On year one, I went down the right side and I tumbled over and I broke my leg.
Quite possibly.
Right.
Quite possibly. Okay. He could also be saying, look, see this tree?
Yeah.
See how that branch is? That's a landmark tree in the race. If you find this tree, you'll always know that you haven't gone wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And you should be finding this tree anywhere between 5 to 6 hours into your loop.
They are allowed to carry watches, are they?
Yes, but you get the watch given to you. Yeah, don't be too excited. So the watch you get given is a piece of crap that the race organiser, Gary Cantrell, has gone off and bought. He sets it to race time, in other words, the time the race started. Which means, by the way, I think it means... The clock is set to, the hands on the watch are set to midday or midnight. No, the 2 hands pointed directly up. At the moment the race starts.
Mm.
Can you imagine not sleeping and running and tackling this forest for anywhere but, say, 24 hours and then 48 hours, and the watch you have...
It doesn't reset after each loop.
No, no. You have to go by the watch you have and make a mental calculation that 12 o'clock was 3 minutes past five in the morning. So therefore, you have to, based on that, how do you figure? You have to figure out what time it is. You can't use it, for instance, even if you knew how to use it as a compass, because the hands are all wrong. You don't know.
Are you allowed to carry marbles in your pocket?
No, you're allowed to carry nothing that's not specified. So you're allowed food, you're allowed the one watch, there's no GPS, there's no iPhones, there's no anything like that.
You can't count every 12 hours I transfer a marble from my right pocket to my left pocket.
No. Nothing to stop you from picking up some twigs.
Yes, that was going through my mind. You're going through my mind, yeah. Keep going, yeah?
Anyway, so that was the story of the event, if you like. Now, there were two other strands. One I'm going to highlight, because it's a very sensitive topic and I don't know the complete ins and outs of it, and that is the following. The organiser, Gary Cantrell, organised a virtual run across, I think it was a run across Tennessee last year. And this event, given that he organises an event for 40 people every year, this online event attracted 20,000 people. Anyway, so... Hugely successful.
Sorry, does that mean that 20,000 people actually ran across Tennessee, or they pretended they were running across Tennessee?
Sorry, it's the pretending. So you can do this anywhere in the world. So he would have said, the distance across Tennessee is 1,000 kilometres. I don't know how big Tennessee is. Say 1,000 kilometres. And you have to run and track using a run tracker. 1,000 kilometers, and you have to do it either.
I've got it.
You know.
Yeah.
And so yeah. So did this. Now apparently, and again, I'm sketchy on the details, but somebody connected their run, or themselves, or whatever, to the Black Lives Matter movement.
Right.
And Gary said, "Listen, I want to keep this completely apolitical."
That means a Donald Trump supporter is actually welcome to run.
Oh, a Donald Trump supporter welcome to run, but can't wear a MAGA hat.
Gotcha.
I want to keep this completely, and his reasoning was, I want this to be an oasis from all this stuff. Hugely divided country. This is the hugely divided country bit is me filling in the gap. He was then accused of white privilege, being anti Black Lives Matter, so I'm a bit sketchy on the details, but it opened up a real split. And he got called out consistently by the wife, no less, of Gary Robbins, the man who missed the cutoff that time.
Called out meaning that she disagreed with him in public.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. Calling him, saying he was wrong and he made a mistake and he should correct this and etc. etc.
A good vigorous public debate that would have been called in the 19th century.
Had he joined in, yeah, it would have been a debate. But it was so. Anyway, so look, I'm not going to take sides here because I don't know the ins and outs.
Yeah.
I know at least of one person who said, before listening to a podcast episode where Gary Cantrell was interviewed about this, said before the podcast I was firmly on one side, after the podcast I was on the other.
Okay.
And they didn't say which side.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's a hugely delicate matter.
Okay.
But it did, of course, cast a shadow over the event, because
and divides the community and all that. Yeah.
Well, there were lots of people in the Twitter feed calling out, saying, "Well, this is a..." Anyway, you can imagine what people were saying and what they were.
He has the right, has he, to say that you can't run in a MAGA hat? Does he have the right to say you can't run with an emblem of a political cause?
My personal view, he runs the race, he organises the race.
Well, this is the Tennessee one, is it?
This is the run across Tennessee.
Anyone can decide I'm going to run in anywhere they like and dress in any way they want, and he can't stop them.
He can't stop them. Yeah. But I'm a bit hazy on why the connection got brought in. It may have been that somebody, and again, like I say, I should really know more about this before I talk about it, but I just wanted to highlight the fact that there'd been an issue around people not being able to express a political affiliation or a political movement during one of his events.
Yeah.
And that had caused controversy and friction. It's really all I can say on it, because I haven't delved deep enough into it, but I did get enough to sort of think. Linda Robbins wasn't mincing her words in any way. He should be called out, he needs to be called out, he needs to change his ways, and he should apologize.
And he didn't reply to any of this?
Well, he was running a race. And I don't know how much in the lead-up how much in the lead-up she expressed this opinion, how much in the lead-up she would have, to Barclay, she would have had a connection with him. I didn't delve into that. Anyway, the far more interesting, from my point of view in a way, was the fact that John Kelly, finisher number 15, who was also on Twitter giving his insight, he commented on a tweet of mine, and he said, are you going to illustrate or do cartoons for Keith Dunn, who is the unofficial, he's the official commentator on Twitter, Keith's tweets. And,
So... Are you aware that somebody who is right that close to the centre of the Barclay Marathon is aware of your existence?
Well, I know why he's aware of my existence, but I was astonished he remembered me.
Right. Okay.
Because when he became number 15... I did, that's how he's affectionately known, is number 15, the 15th finisher. I did a cartoon, and it's basically, and it's a very iconic image of him finishing, because he finishes wearing a plastic bag and this bright orange beanie that he found on the course. And it's a very iconic image, so when he comes running in and he's got this orange beanie, and because a lot of people think, wasn't wearing that when he left. Anyway, and what's the plastic about? Anyway, so, and I drew a scene where all you can see is trees. Trees, 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 trees. It's very densely, this forest. Trees, 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 trees. There's not a leaf on them, but never, because of time of year, but nevertheless, it's still very dense. And a tiny, tiny, tiny figure running, who you wouldn't see, and if you give the picture a casual look, you won't see either. But if you know that you're looking for somebody, of course, what you're looking for is the tiny orange dot that I put on his head.
This is Where's Wally?
It's Where's Wally. Yes, exactly, it's Where's Wally. Or as the race organizer calls them, morons. Where's the moron, is what it would be. And I emailed this to John Kelly at the time, congratulating him. No, actually, what I think I posted it. Then he got in touch, and I sent him a full resolution file. This was 4 or 5 years ago. So he tweeted this, and I thought, goodness. So I tweeted back, that's a brilliant idea. Wish I'd thought of it. But I also tweeted back, this has made my day, because I'm surprised you even remember who I am.
Many people get excited on social media when a celebrity acknowledges their existence. I mean, a lot of people, I've seen people who've kind of gone around walking on air when they got a tweet from Chris Brogan. Yes. Wow, Chris Brogan sent me a tweet.
Well, it made my day, of course. Yes, and then I felt obliged to do some cartoons. Oh, and just as a follow-up to me saying to John Kelly, gosh, what a great idea, and also thank you so much, and thank you for remembering me. He posted back a screenshot of the photographs he has as his screensaver or the backdrop on his computer, one of which is a cartoon I drew to commemorate his finish. So that was lovely.
Roger, you need to be careful. You'd be very careful that you're not recruited as the official cartoonist for the Barclay Marathon. You need to be very careful now, Roger. You might find yourself, and the issue is whether you're capable of keeping up the cartooning work during the 5 days of the marathon. Anyway,
Who knows? Because I only managed to do it for 2 days this year, because it only lasted 2 days. So I did. So that's what I did. I took tweets from Keith, and only from Keith.
Right.
Now, in the end, there weren't that many that I could illustrate, because they were very...
good. Whet people's appetite for more.
Exactly.
Very good. Scarcity strategy, Roger. Excellent.
And I did them in a way that I could do them as quickly as possible to... Now, the best one, and I actually took a photograph of it, on Twitter, if you want to follow along a particular event and everybody's talking about something in particular, as you know, you search the hashtag and then you get a feed with just the hashtag. I took a screenshot because we hadn't heard from Keith for 9-10 hours. Of course, the feed was still full of people talking about Barclay and what have you, but for 9-10 hours. And what happens is people follow from around the world, and the only thing they've got is Twitter. The only official news comes from Keith. He puts out news very sporadically, and people fill in the gaps in between and what have you, have arguments and get into rows about the rules of the race. And that was one that really caught my eye, was somebody was arguing with John Kelly himself about whether or not it was a race. And I thought, do you know who John Kelly is? Because John Kelly's handle isn't John Kelly, it's something a little bit more obscure. So I thought, do you know who you're having an argument with? Anyway, besides the point. Hadn't heard anything from Keith for a while. I knew everybody was refreshing their feed. I knew everybody was looking at their devices going, oh, Jesus, Keith, give us an update, anything. So I drew that cartoon, put it up. Immediately it got lots of likes. And the very next tweet in the hashtag BM100 was from Keith with an update. Not only that, it wasn't immediately clear whether it was an update of something that had happened several hours ago or whether it was a current one. So there was some debate as to whether my cartoon had actually made him.
Well, it just proves that, for example, he follows the hashtag while he's not tweeting, or else somebody else does and says, by the way, guy in Ireland has just done a cartoon of you doing nothing.
I think it was coincidence, sheer coincidence, but nevertheless, it all adds to the magic of my experience.
I don't think historians will take that view. Oh, it was a coincidence that he happened to have a sharp axe and Charles the II or whatever.
Yeah,
got in the way, a sheer coincidence. Carry on.
Well, no, because no, what they'll do is they'll have half the historians will say it was a coincidence, the other half will agree that they will say it wasn't a coincidence, because as we all know from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, then they'll be on the gravy train forever arguing whether or not it was a coincidence. So look, that was all part and parcel of this year's experience of the Barclay Marathons.
Is there any award ceremony, Roger? So somebody completes the fun run. Is there any certificate to say you've completed the fun run, congratulations? Or is there any participant's certificate? This is you've started the race, okay, you didn't finish even round one, but you get a participant certificate.
You get something. If you're a participant, you get something far more valuable. Because don't forget, you've gone round the course tearing out pages of these hidden books. Now, these pages are... Now, going back to Gary Robbins, he recently auctioned off a collection of pages from one of the rounds of Barclay. And he had to put up a video once you've made this offer, it's, I've got these
to authenticate?
No, not to authenticate. You have to put up a video to say, I just want to thank everybody who's got in touch to say that I shouldn't be auctioning these pages and that I shouldn't feel compelled to, and whatever it is I'm raising money for, please, 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 will I do it some other way? Because these pages are so significant to the individual that we really don't want you selling...
To give them away.
Yeah, we really don't want you to have to part
Your
with these.
Your grandchildren should have them.
Well, it's such a personal thing to have pages. Now, he's got a good few pages.
But
to have pages from the Barclay... And he actually had to say, look, I really appreciate everybody saying this. These pages, while they do mean something to me... And he had a reasoning. He said, look, they're not the be-all and end-all. They're not from the race you all know me for. They're not from... They're from whatever, and he said, I'm quite...
When you get a minute, can I have an Americano, please?
Oh, yeah, no bother.
He said, I'm very happy to part with these. I'm at peace part. Do not think I have to... I'm doing this out of some kind of need. So, but anyway, yeah, so if you participate and you get a page, just even a solitary page, would be a huge thing. Because not many people have...
But if you win the auction and you get one...
Well, yes, but then you haven't... You've bought it from Gary. You haven't run the Barclay Marathon. You haven't...
But think of how many dinner parties you can have in your house.
Oh, I agree, but
and
I'm...
And you say... Do any of you know what this is?
I agree. I'm just addressing the point of does a participant get a certificate?
Oh, yeah.
They get something far more valuable.
But
you're right. If you're able to say...
How much did it raise in the auction?
I don't know, actually.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Where was I? Do you get any kind of recognition? I would be very surprised if you did, simply because that's not what Barclay is about. There's no trophy. There's no...
Do you have to put in your real name when you're entering the Barclay?
I don't know.
Do you take milk or sugar or anything like that? Or?
No, John. No, just straightforward, John. Okay. Thanks ever so much.
No problem. How are you?
Take this one? Oh, sure. Right. Look, well, I speak for myself. I had a wonderful weekend.
Good. The rugby was brilliant.
Pardon?
The rugby was brilliant.
Oh, well, that added to it.
India were excellent in the T20. 224 is an excellent score.
It is one of the most brilliant.
I had a miserable weekend. Thanks for asking, John.
Well, I did ask you both. I said, how are you for the weekend? Paul answered first one.
If only that Indian bowler hadn't taken two wickets in a single over at a point when England were 134 for one.
But regardless of that, I think the England bowler batters, there's a few of them didn't perform at all.
Yeah.
224 is a tough.
You're pushing too hard ultimately.
Yeah,
but to get 180 is a great score. That's 190. It's a win of most matches.
That would win most matches comfortably, but anything like 220
or any over 200 is you're guaranteed your chance of winning that match.
Because you've got so much pressure on the opposition. So, that was a hell of a score to get.
So, your sporting weekend wasn't great?
My Saturday was a bit miserable.
Because of the cricket.
I also watched the rugby tweeting with a friend of mine who's Welsh.
Right, okay.
So you can imagine.
That's what I'm going to say to you. Usually when the Welsh lose, the English are usually happy, I think, are they?
No, I would have loved Wales.
The Welsh are usually happy when
the
English
lose.
I would have. Yeah, it doesn't work the other way around.
Yeah.
We don't mind if Ireland win or if...
But the English look down on the Welsh. So they don't consider themselves to be...
No, England fear Wales when we play them at rugby. Cause,
I missed that blooming match.
Which one?
The Wales-France one.
Jeez, that was a great match.
I know, because you see, having done Toastmasters twice in the day, this is stretching family, and done the second, the last bit of Scotland-Italy, wasn't much point.
No.
And having watched the whole of the Irish, I thought, hang on now, Paul, you do actually have a family.
Would your wife be interested? No.
My wife would almost never sit down in front of a rugby match.
Yeah, she'd love it.
She has never been to...
She'd watch that game.
Yeah. But both matches, actually, she'd watch.
God, you're lucky there, because my wife has never even been to a Toastmasters meeting.
It's all about training. It takes a while, but it's all about training.
Look, Paul, what you do is you leave photographs. You leave photographs.
How many All-Irelands did you have to take her to, John?
Look, Paul, you just leave photographs.
She watches, actually, you know?
Leave pictures of Untermack around the place, and then she'll go, oh, who's this? And you go, oh, well, actually, he's a dashing Frenchman. Yes.
Believe it or not, and, she had one guy that she wanted to watch always. He was the Scottish scrum half, small guy, jet black hair. Fuck is his name? He's only just recently retired a year or two.
Yeah, I can see him. I don't know the name.
It's not Red Pat, no, it was after that.
No, I'm not a...
It's not Laidlaw.
No, I don't know. That's way back. Oh, God, he moved to France. He was playing with France there recently. Oh, God. By the way, she shot. He was the bee's knees in it, watching him.
Yeah, I mean, rugby should be particularly attractive to heterosexual women.
Well, all sports, in that that's the case. Why just rugby?
We're talking about rugby. If you want to broaden this now onto GAA, John, we can...
No, but you're narrowing the narrative as well, but you're only when you're talking about it, they should be attracted to these heterosexual, they should be attracted to those. Sure, I presume when they play Aussie rules now, that's the same thing. Like they'd be attracted to those.
But of course you'd be right. But even well, the only game that heterosexual women are not attracted to is chess.
Possibly.
The benefit of rugby is you can point at the forwards and you can say, look, I have the physique of an international class athlete. Yeah. What are you, you know, you can sit there and just spread out.
We were all waiting for Usain Bolt to take up rugby and...
He was going to take up soccer.
Yeah, he was.
But see, the problem with soccer, of course, is that they dive too much. They really aren't showing them their manliness at all in soccer. Whereas in rugby, they're just showing how tough they are.
I thought the...
I believe that soccer is good because it shows the feminine side of men. They hug each other, they kiss each other after scores. And that used to be disapproved of, and soccer has led the way on public acceptance of the expression of affection among the male community. That's my proposition.
Okay.
Well, women have been doing it for years.
Okay. It's interesting the point you make, actually, that of all the sports, I think, and I'm talking about a different subject here, slightly different, but on homosexuality in sport, I think it's more acceptable in rugby and other sports than it is in soccer. Mm. Soccer, if they feel that they come out as being homosexual, they feel that they can't be accepted in the soccer world, which is surprising.
Have you read the autobiography of that wonderful French Welsh referee?
I know his name.
The Only Gay in the Village.
Pardon?
The Only Gay in the Village.
Is that the name of it?
Well, that's your man. That's what he names us. Like, he's very funny.
What's his name? Oh, God, we all know him.
Yeah. Owens? No.
Yeah,
Nigel Owens. Nigel Owens.
He is one of the best referees I've ever come across.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant guy, actually.
But I'm sure he has an autobiography.
He probably does.
Covers the... journey.
Yeah, he is a tough journey. He's now gone back farming. He's just mostly farming now.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. And he's doing some of the rugby still. He's gone from the international, but he's farming. He's showing pictures of his prized bulls and so forth.
Just thinking of rugby and bulls, which are...
Can I tell you the truth?
The connection is pretty... Oh, God.
He's out in the field saying, right, I've no nonsense.
Yeah. And stay apart, though. Engage.
Roger, I don't know what we're going to do with this piece of audio because we've had how many sports in, but I think it's a normal conversation. So is there anything else you need to say about the Barclay?
About the Barclay Marathons.
Other than...
It's gone, and now we have to wait another year for another opportunity.
Now, do you want me to retweet as part of your campaign to become
the official war cartoonist, or whatever it's called? God, I don't know. Yes, why not? Let's make this.
Have they turned down, by the way, because people be listening to this wouldn't understand the difference in spelling. Says he, hoping that he's right about this. Sponsorship by Barclays Bank.
Yeah, and the spelling is very crazy. It's a good point. Yeah, it is different spelling. So spelt the same as Charles Barkley, the basketball player. I mean, look, it's not Barclay with a C anyway.
Well, I know, but I'm just talking about the sponsorship from the bank.
I know.
You know.
But they're spelt differently, so I don't know.
It's a bit like messing with Mickey Mouse's ears.
Yeah, I don't think. Okay. Also, this is an event. You couldn't sponsor this. I don't think
they
wouldn't take the money.
No.
I mean, the entry fee is $1.60, plus if it's your first time, you have to bring a license plate, and if it isn't, you have to bring a gift for Laz. The AKA the nom de plume of the organizer Gary Cantrell is known as Lazarus Lake. But I can make myself the unofficial cartoonist. Whether that would be welcomed or not, I'd find out.
You know what? I would imagine that the ethos of the whole thing is it's partly about individual idiosyncrasies. I mean, it is the most idiosyncratic event that could be held. All of the rules are deliberately fashioned with a view to being totally unpredictable. All of the recognition of the participation is similarly done. So I very much doubt that the organizer would, you know, what's the word, rail against you? You used it earlier, call you out. How dare an Irish cartoonist piggyback on the back?
Yeah. Well, as long as I think with Barclay there are lines. So I think if I were to take commercial advantage of this,
that would be
a line crossed.
Well, even I disapprove of that.
Yes, exactly.
However, what is commercial advantage in the age of reputation?
This is true.
I mean, the fact that I don't get commercial advantage out of it today, but become known by the 250,000 people who are ultramarathon fans and runners all over the world.
Yep.
And when some photographer is deciding to produce, you know, a book of the Barclays, especially to raise money for a charity, let us say, and your illustrations appear.
Here's an interesting point. I've just pledged my money for a documentary photography book about the Barclay Marathons. Highlighting the 15, it's called The Finishers, and I didn't really have to know too much about it. I just thought, gosh, this looks fabulous.
Is this a Kickstarter you're supporting?
It's called volume.com, and that's kind of a Kickstarter kind of idea, yeah. So I thought, well, look, I've just come into some birthday money, I'll use it for that.
And there will be a book of photographs of this thing.
Yeah, and there'll be text as well, because it's about the 15 people.
How would I find out, since I did support Peter Cox's Kickstarter?
I'll send you a link.
And I presume that I would be able to afford the lowest level, which is you get a copy of the book.
It's relatively pricey at €55 plus.
Well, look, given that we've spent more than 55 minutes talking about it, I don't see why I couldn't find a means of spending €1 per minute. In fact, less, because I've talked to you about the Barclay Marathon for on and off for how many years?
At least 4 years now. 5 years?
I wonder if there is up on some platform recording of our previous conversations about the Barclay Marathon. There must be somewhere.
There is. SoundCloud, go back to season.
Did we do it in Business Jazz?
Business Jazz, yeah, I'm sure it was.
I hope I put the hashtag Barclay Marathon on it or something. Did we? We hardly use the Barclay Marathon in the title. We probably put something like Kittens Don't Go Running.
Well, and how appropriate, given that Barclay Cats was a thing and all these cats
we haven't got time to talk about Barclay Cats. I'm going to stop the recording.
Do, and I'm just
because
have a quick look to see if
this is 47 minutes, Roger. Okay, there we go.
Nice.
As they say on Clubhouse, Paul out